ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter 12, entitled Beyond Renunciation and Knowledge, text 3, 2, 6. That's a lot of text. Satsangena hidaiteya. Yatu dhana mriga kaga Kandarva psaro naga Siddhat charana guyaka Satsangena hidaiteya Jatu dhana mriga kaga Kandarvapsarasunaga Siddhascharana Guyaka. Satsangena. By association with my devotees. He. Certainly. Daiteyaha. The sons of Diti. Yatu Danaha. Demons. Mrigaha. Animals. Kagaha. Birds. Gandharva. Gandharvas. Apsarasaha. The society girls of heaven. Nagaha. Snakes. Siddhaha. Residents of Siddhaloka. Charana. The Charanas. Guyakaha. The Guyakas. And then there are three more verses. Vijadaram manusyesu vaisya sudrast viyunjata. Rajastama prakrityas tasmins tasmins yuge yuge bahavamat padam praptastu tvastra kaya davadaya vyapasvarvalir banu mayas chata vibhishna sugrivahanamanrikso gajau grido vanikpata vyadakubja vraje gopyo yagya patnyas tatapare. To do the word for word of four verses is too much, so I'm skipping that. Translation. In every yuga, many living entities entangled in the modes of passion and ignorance gained the association of my devotees. Thus, such living entities as the daityas, rakshasas, birds, beasts, kandarvas, apsaras, nagas, siddhas, charnas, guyakas, and vijadaras, as well as such lower class human beings as the vaishyas, sudras, women, and others, were able to achieve my supreme abode. Vritasura, Prahlad Maharaj and others like them also achieved my abode by association with my devotees, as did personalities such as Vrishaparva, Bali Maharaj, Banasura, Maya, Vibhisana, Sugriva, Hanuman, Jambavan, Gajendra, Jatayu, Tuladhara, Dharmavyada, Kubja, the gopis in Vrindavan, and the wives of the Brahmanas, who were performing sacrifice. And then I'll read through the purport as step by step. Om Agyanatim Anandasya Kinanaya Salakaya Saksura Militam Yanantas Maya Sri Gurave Namaha. So we see here a long list of living beings who all went back to Godhead. And we can see that they were not all Brahmanas. It wasn't that they all took their birth in qualified Brahmana families, but rather even some of the daityas, some of the demons, or some other creatures, even animals, returned back to Godhead. Therefore, in this verse, we find evidence for the position of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, who really established the basis at great risk and at great fight. He established that anyone of any caste, creed, race, or whoever in this world was eligible to go back to Godhead. Something which was not so acceptable in the fifth chapter of the Nectar of Devotion. We find that Srila Prabhupada makes mention of this, how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur fought the caste Goswamis again and again. Major confrontations where each time he came out victorious, but even to the point where they resorted to violence, tried to kill him, attacked the parikrama that was organized by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. They had many cart loads loaded up with stones, and large groups of people throwing stones. So the whole idea was, it was organized by gundas, but it was supposed to look as if it was the villagers who did it, right? Therefore no weapons but stones like this. Yes. Anyway, so Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was not bending and was holding on to the conclusions of the scriptures, which point out that karma can never be an obstruction to bhakti. There is no question that anyone's karma is so bad that it would become an obstacle to bhakti. There's no question. So even for ourselves, we cannot use that excuse. On Krishna's lotus feet, we see that there are different symbols, and one of the symbols found on Krishna's lotus feet is the thunderbolt. And the thunderbolt is there just to establish that it said, even if you have a mountain of karma, or in other words, if your karma is so bad that it has become insurmountable, that thunderbolt on Krishna's lotus feet can just smash it to pieces. That is the point. That's why it is there. So in this way, we can appreciate that no obstacle is there. Yes, but what if you have a bad astrological chart? What can you do? You have been taking to spiritual life for a number of years. You have really tried, but it didn't work. It just didn't work. You didn't know why. All along you were trying, but it's somehow or other it was so difficult. And other people seemed to not have the same problems that you were having. Then one day you went to an astrologer, and it all came out. Ah, just see, it's Rahu. Oh dear, oh dear. All along, I knew it. I knew it, that there was something blocking me. Yeah, I knew it. I knew it was an external force. I knew it wasn't me. I knew it wasn't my fault either. All these problems and so on. What could I do? It's Rahu. So what about Rahu and a few other planets? What about? Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna is so powerful, he can kick out millions of Rahus in one kick. Yeah. So, therefore, we need not be concerned with our astrological chart and think that it determines our life. It doesn't. It doesn't. In fact, the chanting of the holy name is so powerful, it can lift us above. Yes, you may say that, but you don't have a chart like I have, and I actually really feel it. Yes, you may. Yes, you may. That I won't deny. But simply take shelter a little more of the holy name. Take shelter a little extra. If you have a very bad chart, then you need to chant a little more. Yes. Chant a little more and see. It will be a blessing, actually. Because we also see how actually that bad karma becomes a blessing. It actually becomes something that makes us more convinced. Because due to that bad karma, we will suffer. And that suffering will actually give us strength. It will actually convince us this material world ain't a picnic. And it's time to move on. Let's get out of here. So, for the demigods, they have good karma. They have fantastic astrological charts, every single one of them. All the planets in the right houses, and yes, and therefore they have appeared on heavenly planets and all these wonderful facilities that they have. And the result is, oh, it's so difficult to fix myself in spiritual life. Oh, yes. Therefore, it is said that those who take birth on this planet, that means those who have bad karma, anyone on this planet, the very birth on this planet is not that good. If you haven't noticed yet, there are a few crocodiles in the waters, right, and so on. So, considering all that, we are actually fortunate, and the path back to Godhead is wide open, and there are no excuses other than that we don't want to surrender. What's new under the sun? Yes, this is what we are actually becoming aware of. The day that we came to the temple, we thought, yes, now, today is a historical day, because today I am surrendering to Krishna. We invited the press, pictures were taken, and headlines were there, and unfortunately, we found out only after 20 years that actually we weren't surrendered at all. It was a shock. It was hard to admit it. But from that day on, we realized that we were not super bhakta. Yes, it's hard. It's hard to admit it. Oh my God, I always thought I was a pure devotee in 3 days. And then it turned out that actually I'm a fallen, conditioned soul who is just hanging in there, just by his fingernails, right, somehow or other, on the edge of Krishna consciousness. Mercy. Mercy is what we need. This is actually the situation. Well, we've come to the right movement because there's plenty of it. Plenty. It's in all directions. Wherever we go, there is so much of it. Sometimes a bit too much, isn't it? Anyway, we are somehow or other trying to take shelter. Take shelter of Krishna and Krishna's arrangements. One has to understand that Krishna makes arrangements for all the conditioned souls again and again. Right? He appears again and again in different incarnations. He reveals the scriptures. He arranges for deities to be found all over the universe. He makes endless arrangements. Great devotees are roaming the three worlds. And in this way, the glory of Krishna is known. And the process of elevating ourselves is available in all time, place, and circumstances. So now I'll read a few lines of the purport. The Lord has mentioned devotees such as the gopis in Vrindavan and also demons like Banasura to illustrate how he comes under the control of those who surrender to him. It is understood that devotees like the gopis and others mentioned here obtain pure love of Krishna Whereas the demons generally obtained only salvation. Many demons were purified by association with devotees and came to accept devotional service to the Lord as the most important among the various activities in their lives. But the exalted devotees, like Prahlad and Bali Maharaj, know nothing except devotional service, which they accept as their very life. Still, the reformed demons are also mentioned, so that the readers of Srimad Bhagavatam will understand the enormous benefits one may achieve by associating with the devotees of the Lord. So, the devotees of the Lord, they can purify anyone and everyone. Even neophyte devotees can do great things. I'll tell you a short story to illustrate the point. On one occasion, I was going for a program in a place called Rotterdam, a rotten place, as the name might indicate. And in that place, it was bombarded in the Second World War, and after the Second World War, they built a concrete jungle. So, therefore, it has a very high percentage of heroin addicts, somehow or other. So, on this occasion, we were going to the program by bus. So, we're standing at a bus stop, catching the bus, me and one new bhakta. The bhakta had just joined 3 weeks before, brand new, fresh off the shelf, right, as they come, a real bhakta. So, just then, this junkie came. Hey man, hey man, you got one gilva, hey man, hey man. So, since I have lived in India a long time, I know how to deal with a beggar. You look very uninterested. No expression on the face. Don't look him in the eye. Look sort of in space. And with your hand, make some gesture. I learned it on Indian trains. And so, in this way, he went in no time. Then the bhakta, being a real bhakta, he called him back. He called him back. He says, I have something for you. And he pulled out a brown piece of apple left over from breakfast. Right? I mean, it was evening, totally brown. And he says, here, for you, prasadam. The junkie looked at it from, what? What's this? He couldn't believe his eyes. The bhakta, full with fresh, new enthusiasm, said, open your mouth. The junkie did open his mouth. I'm not sure why. Maybe he was surprised. And anyway, the bhakta, full determination, popped the apple into his mouth and gave him human birth. Because anyone who takes prasadam, next life, human birth guaranteed. There you see, practice bhakti yoga for 3 weeks and you can give human birth. We should advertise it. This is what I call spiritual advancement. This is power. Just see how one becomes empowered in this process of devotional service. Just any ordinary person, within 3 weeks' time, could just already hand out human birth. It's not a small feat. Not a small feat at all. So, yes, devotees become very powerful. Very powerful. Great devotees can deliver the entire universe. So it is said that the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were so powerful that one of them could easily deliver the entire universe. We would have never believed that statement if Srila Prabhupada would not have come into this world. But seeing what he did, we developed that faith. Yes, it is possible that one pure devotee can deliver the entire universe. There is no doubt about it. Are you doubting? Are you doubting? Have you not heard that extraterrestrials have also come to planet Earth? And you think that by now they haven't heard the holy name? Sure enough, they also have become touched. Therefore, I think that some new vehicles have been added to the Sankirtan fleet, right? Some flying saucers out there distributing the mercy of Mahaprabhu. The mercy of Mahaprabhu, whether that is true or not, is to be seen. But Srila Prabhupada's influence undoubtedly spread everywhere. Srila Prabhupada undoubtedly could touch the life of many, and is still touching the life of many today. Many who never met him in person are still changing their life on the strength of Prabhupada's teachings, his mercy. So see the power of a pure devotee in terms of delivering the entire universe, and yes, changing the demons, because in this age of Kali, the world population is gradually come down to the demoniac platform. The other day I was reading a statement where Srila Prabhupada said that India is ahead of everyone else. India is the most advanced country, he said, in terms of Kali Yuga. Interesting. When I read it, I had to think about that. But then I was thinking, well, if I think of the business that goes on in organs, how innocent villagers check into the hospital, and how a few kidneys are being removed and being sold for kidney transplants, not uncommon in India. It's a well-known practice. Do they know anything? They think Dr. D has done important operation to save their life. He did. He saves lives of many people and makes a lot of money. Just to give one example of the things that come in Indian newspapers. So just to enliven you this morning, I thought let me mention this point. Because by the influence of the pure devotees, even the most fallen can be saved. So there is hope. There is hope. So no one should be proud and think that we have taken an exalted birth and we are beyond that. We are beyond that. No, rather we should count ourselves amongst the fallen. That would be wise. Everyone knows. Everyone knows whatever sinful activities we may have performed in this lifetime. And if we would have 1 minute silence to think about our sinful activities, that would become a dark moment. We would see clouds packing together above our heads, remembering for 1 minute our moments of weakness in this life alone. Who can say that he is above? Right? Therefore, we indeed are recipients of mercy. Let us understand that. We came to this Krishna consciousness not because of our own desire, not because of our karma, not because of our own exalted qualities. Well, it was inevitable. It was natural that I came to this movement. It was destiny. It had to happen. I knew it. After all, I was a great pious soul from birth. Not exactly. not exactly. Somehow or other, in this age, who has any piety at all? Who has still any qualification? Yes, but I took my birth in a Brahmin family. Very good. That makes you a Brahma Bandhu. As Srila Prabhupada said, a Brahma Bandhu, the relative of a Brahmana. Right. It doesn't make anyone a brahmana, because scriptures have clearly stated, jayato sudro, Janmanam jayate sudro. By birth, everyone's sudra. Sanskarit bhavet dvija. By sanskara, one can become twice born. Only sanskara can do it. Then vedapatit bhavet vipra. By following the Vedas, then one can become a vipra. What is a vipra? He is a brahmana who performs karmakanda. So still not good enough. It's in the material level. And then brahmana janatiti brahmana. So a brahmana is one who actually knows Brahman. So that's very rare. And what does it mean to know Brahman? To really accept that aham brahmasmi, I'm not this body. It's not an easy thing. That means samena cha damena cha. That means to be equipoised. That means to control the senses. Not an easy level to attain brahmana. And then, that's not good enough either to know Brahman, as we know from Srimad Bhagavatam. Varanti tat tatvavindas tatvam get tatvam get jnanam advayam. Brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti sabjate. There are these three levels: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. One must realize not only Brahman, the all-pervading energy of the Lord, but also the Super Soul, also the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these are all different levels. Who knows all these things? All that is now lost. Vedic culture has become covered. It has become covered by misconception. It has become covered by false teachers. Sankara, yes, Sankara came. Mayavad asatshastra, asatshastra. It is said he came to teach asatshastra, asat, not sat. Here we're speaking about satsanga, but he came to give asatsanga. On the order of the Supreme Lord, as it is explained in the Padma Purana, Sankara came into this world to bewilder the minds of the people and to take them away from the Vedas. Buddha first came, took people completely away from the Vedas with his Ahimsa philosophy, and then Sankara gave the impersonal understanding of the Vedic literature to bewilder the minds of the conditioned souls. That philosophy now has become very, very widespread. Very widespread. That has become very predominant. Swamiji, yes, it is all one. Then can I have your watch, please? Yes. So your pocket, my pocket, is all one. I put, no problem, correct? Yes, Swamiji, very nice. And then, but if after they want a watch back, they'll give it. If you challenge them, you say it's all one. Yes, then you prove it. Then you give me the watch. Your pocket, my pocket, is same. You give. They will give it if you pressurize them. But after they say, okay, very good joke, now I want it back. Then we say, no. It is all one. That is our advice. But who has the courage to speak? Even those who know, they don't speak. They don't speak up. No. Even we don't speak up. Oh, no. Do we have to tell them that? Oh, no. Do we have to challenge people? No. Do we have to stand up in the world and say it's all bogus? Do we have to do that? Do we have to face our parents and say, no, you are wrong? Can we? Do we have to? Yes, we may have to. In this age of Kali, we may have to. But this is very difficult. It is true. It is difficult. But somewhere we have to. when they are wrong. Because devarsi bhutaptanam pitrinam nakinkarunayam rinsarajan sarvatmanam yasaranam saranyam katomukundam parityaya kirtam. All duties are no longer valid when we have surrendered to the Supreme Lord. As soon as you've taken shelter of Krishna, then no more duties to the devas, no more duties to the rishis, devasa bhutapta, no duties to the forefathers, no duties to any family members. All these duties are no longer there, relieved from all duties. These are big statements that we read in Srimad Bhagavatam. We read them and we think, yes, yes, and we carry on with our duties. This is our nature. So who has the courage to live according to Srimad Bhagavatam? To say, oh, this is the truth, I will live like this. Very difficult. There is a biography of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and it is a critical biography written by a scholarly devotee, academic, from an academic background, and it is called Hinduism in Modernity. Modernity then is referring to this modern time and all the features that modern time has, and how Hinduism began to adjust itself at the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And the book is very interesting because it's an academic biography, and in an academic biography what they try to do, they try to show how a man is a product of his time. And they're showing Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur as a product of his time, how he responded to his time. And how he, for example, it describes that the British influence was getting strongly established, and it brought with it a modern approach of gaining knowledge. And in Calcutta, there was a group of people known as the Bhadra Lok, and they were all intellectuals who were writers and scholars who were interested in studying the Vedic tradition, but according to the modern approach, in a more academic type of way. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was also open to that. Yes, he also read Western philosophers. He also sometimes referred to their writings and so on. So in one sense, it is true. In one sense, he certainly reacted on his time, and he was, in that sense, a typical man of his time. But in another sense, he was a timeless man, a completely timeless man, who spoke eternal transcendental knowledge. So this is what we have to become, timeless. Not bound by our culture, not afraid of the what our neighbors think. No. Sometimes I have spoken about a herd of sheep, and what I call the herd syndrome, and how everyone is looking, what is my neighbor doing? And then I will not act too much different. So I used this example last summer for an audience of about 350, and I asked them all to say, "Bam!" And I tell you, it was powerful. When 350 people all said, "Bam!" Then it was really, we really had a herd of sheep. Yes. Which I don't mean to offend anyone, but I do mean to ask the question, are we ready to be different? Are we ready to be different from everybody else? Are we ready to stand up for the truth? Are we ready to live it? Or if everybody else is not, then are we also going to compromise? This is the question. This is the question. It takes great courage to be a devotee, because we have to be ready to be different. Tamal Krishna Maharaj wrote a book called Hare Krishna in the SMU. This is what he wrote when he started up his academic studies. And it was a very interesting book. It was made up of essays that he wrote for his degree. And he came up with many interesting points that are quite relevant. I can highly recommend the book. At one point, he's describing how he was introduced in some public lecture in the university, and how a professor introduced him like, he said, and today we are having here His Divine Grace, he was reading it from a piece of paper, His Divine Grace, Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj, right? And he is a living time warp, he said. I'll translate that for you. A living time warp. What he meant was that he is a creature that should not have existed anymore. He should have been extinct. He should have been extinct thousands of years ago. But here he is standing in front of you, something like a living dinosaur. Ladies and gentlemen, Tamal Krishna Goswami. There he was. And well, any devotee like that, I mean, our dress certainly looks more to something that Plato or Socrates used to wear, right? It's something like a toga, you know. Yes, it's certainly different from jeans and t-shirt, if you know what I mean, which is the common dress around the world these days. In other words, yes, we are living somewhere, well, literally speaking, in the Stone Ages. You know what I'm talking about. You know, are you from the Stone Ages, mate? In a way, we are. In a way, we are. Right? We are following customs that are very ancient. And the question that I must raise, is it really relevant in modern time? Is it possible? Is it possible to live like this? Is it really possible to live in 2009, right, in the same way as people did 5,000 years ago? I mean, if we would ask someone to live like a pharaoh, you know, like an Egyptian pharaoh, etc., right here in the middle of Melbourne, would you believe in it? Would you say, and you'd stay in your pyramid at night? And like, would it be realistic? So is it realistic to live like this? Many people from India who come from a village, because they say India prospers by its villages, and most people come from a village, actually, in India. Because more than 90% of the population in India is still living in villages. Interesting. So, therefore, if you ask someone, what is your village? They always have some village, right? And in the village, there is the pandit. Ah, yes. Ha! Pandit. Pandit behead. So, the pandit is, he is teaching the tradition. Yes. And then, yes, people like that tradition, but how to follow it in modern times? And then you go to university, and then it's finished with old tradition. Finished. What to do? How can you? First it was the men, and now it's the ladies. Now in India, the ladies are also giving up tradition. Now they are driving. Yes, that is a new development in India. right? Still relatively new. And you know, ladies always have way when they drive. In India, it's like this. Yeah, it's like they just drive. Straight on. It's like straight. But whatever. No, it's like, yeah. But no, but whatever. Beyond that, my point is, it's a change. It's Western influence, very much so. Something that was unheard of. Not so long ago. I remember it like yesterday, that was unheard of. Okay? So, here we are. Even in India, tradition doesn't work anymore. Even in India, it's gone. Right? Who would wear a dhoti? In Delhi. Yes? You go in Delhi in a dhoti? Oh, come on, you know. I mean, what will your friends say? They'll all laugh, like anything. In India, young students, you preach to them, but they don't want to wear neck beads. What will people say? Oh, no. They don't. It's very difficult to convince them to wear neck beads. Yes, you try, I know. I tried. Oh no, even after initiation. But do I have to wear them all the time? Yes. Oh. You can't hide them anymore? No. You can't hide them anymore. You have to wear them all the time. Yes. So, are we ready to be different? We are afraid. Srila Prabhupada used to tell the story of a group of people. They were all Vaishnav. They were all wearing tilak, everything. And they were working in a factory. But then with time, that factory was sold to a Muslim. So the Muslim, he made an announcement. He had an announcement made in the company that from today on, no one can wear tilak anymore in this company. That I'm very sorry, but we can't allow this. Right? So people cried. They cried like anything. Oh, but I'm going to lose my job. I have to do my family. I need to maintain my family. With tears in their eyes, they took off the tilak. Yes. Broke their heart. What to do? They went to work without tilak. Yes. But one man, he came to work with the tilak. And everyone said, are you crazy? He said, no. He said, I have worn tilak my whole life. I will not give up my tilak. It is my principle. He said, oh, you lose your job. They'll throw you out. Said, no. Then the boss noticed, so you are wearing tilak. Don't you know that we have given the order that no one can wear tilak in this company anymore? I said, yes, I know that this order has been given. Then? He said, no, this is my religion. It is my duty. I must wear it, and I cannot give it up. The boss looked at him and he said, I like you. You've got guts. He said, from this day on, you can wear tilak in this company, but nobody else can. So Prabhupada told this story to encourage us to be brave, to stand up. Because if we stand up for Krishna consciousness, then we become satsanga. If we are Vaishnavas, but we hide. I am a Vaishnava. Shh, don't tell anyone. Shirt and tie. No one will see it. Yes. I have a Bhagavad Gita and I read it in lunch hour, but only when no one is looking. Sometimes I hold up a newspaper and in it I read the Gita. Yes. It's a very good tip. Yes. Yes. So if somehow or other we are hiding and hiding and hiding our Krishna consciousness, right, then where will the satsanga be? That's when people say, they see a devotee in devotional clothing and they say, where have you been? Where have you been? I haven't seen you guys for years. Because we are all plain clothes devotees. Even if we go to the laundromat, we quickly jump in some jeans. Right? Disguise, disguise. Yes, we are all secret servants, secret agents. Right? Yes. No. We must be bold. We must be bold. And ready to stand up. And ready to say, yes, I'm a vegetarian. You don't drink. You don't drink. No, I don't. You? Very simple. Bounce straight back. Don't become intimidated. Tell them, yes, it's poison. You must be out of your mind. You don't drink coffee. Thank God I don't. I drink that stuff for nothing in the world. It's toxic. Everybody knows. It's poison. Raises your blood pressure and gives you heart trouble. You got to be out of your mind. Would you like a cup of poison, please? No? Huh? Yes. Say the truth then. Right? Do you take milk and sugar in your poison? Like this, we got to be brave and tell people. If we are brave and if we stand up for what we believe, then we will become stronger also. But if we hide, always hide, oh, we'll be so weak. And as soon as we're walking in these clothes, and someone says, what's that? It's a dirty or I am belonging to some sect. Yes. No, we just say no. We just say yes. This is a dirty. These are spiritual clothes. They're very good. Yes, you should also have. Yes, you should have. You know, we should not be so afraid. We should be bold, and we should know we've got the best. We've got the best, and we should tell people this is the best. And then you'll be surprised how so many people out there are actually ready. They say, "Oh, really? Very interesting. How nice." I always meet nice people. It's amazing how many nice people I meet out there. It's very rare that I meet some sour face, you know. Sour face. You know? some weird guy. Like, I was in a line on an airport, and some guy behind me goes, you know, you are just like Al-Qaeda. You know. And I looked at the man, you know. I thought, like, I said, like, what do you mean, you know? I'm peacefully standing here in a line, and you're coming to me in such an aggressive way that you are like Al-Qaeda. You know, you're aggressive. You know, I'm just a peace-loving citizen, you know. So we don't let them terrorize us with their demoniac culture and intimidate us, you know.
Huh? What you doing? What you got in that little bag?
Well, oops. A japa mala.
What's that?
You know, it's very nice. It's for chanting Hare Krishna, and that's good for you. Tell them straight. And if we do, then we become satsanga. Then we become positive association for people. And whether they accept it or not, they'll get purified. They'll get purified. But if we always just want to be accepted by everyone, if we are so afraid that people may not accept us, then we will hide our whole life. But what will happen is we will become so much influenced by the mundane association that we will find it difficult to maintain our spiritual standards. I know I spoke a little bold and strong this morning, so just before breakfast, on an empty stomach, I know that that's a bit much. But yeah, I'm on a different time, you see. Therefore, I'm still in European time, so for me it's evening now. So this is a late night lecture. After three meals I have already been taken. So therefore, I'm sure you should take it in that spirit. Right? I should have softly eased you into the day, but because I'm at the evening time, I just give you the conclusion. So let us somehow or other build up this courage to be more strong in our devotee identity. That will help us when we have to deal with mundane association. Because otherwise, it's not easy. How do you maintain Krishna consciousness at work? Well, maybe keep your tilak on. I know several people who are bold like that, and they get away with it. Some people get away with it, believe it or not. I know one person, he just came to work, dhoti, shaved up, tilak, everything. And they accepted it. And he's still working like that. One day, he just rocked up. True story. So I'll open it up for discussion now to see for your responses. So it's time to wake up. It's time for questions. I can take a deep breath and think about it and just don't be shy. Yes.
Hare Krishna. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and from him Srila Prabhupada and many of his disciples went right now on book distribution or for meetings with higher people. They used to wear nice jackets. Prabhupada said you could dress like a gentleman or a lady. So sometimes finding the balance in Vaishnava attire and work attire or social attire, is it up to you to make that decision, or does one need to follow something that a senior member wears? So just don't eat quota but with a nice jacket on, or can one make their own decision as to what they think is acceptable?
Did everyone hear that?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. If you are an initiated devotee, or if you have accepted the spiritual master, then you always are under the direction of the spiritual master. So then it's the spiritual master who decides the standard. When we are not initiated and we are just independent, yes, then we can take any independent decision we like. Generally speaking, our spiritual masters are not going to micromanage our life. It would become a little too much for them. So generally, spiritual masters leave these things up to us. But there is some general understanding. And that is this, that these clothes, these spiritual clothes, they give us protection. They give us shelter. So to wear them is certainly a great blessing. Even if we go out in the world like that, in front of everyone, it protects us. So we should not avoid it too much. Ideally speaking, everyone should wear such clothes at least when they come to the temple. Right? And when we are together in spiritual functions, we should wear. And what will the neighbors say? They'll get used to it. Right? After a while, they're okay with it. Right? And then even the alcoholic from next door starts listening to devotional bhajans. You'd be surprised, right? I was just told this morning. Yeah. how my bhajans are even top of the pops with the with those kind of people. So it takes maturity. To be a devotee, one has to grow up quick. Yeah. Prahlad Maharaj was telling that to his demon friends. He said, "My dear sons of the demons," and he spoke about, "You can't waste your life just playing." He said, "No, we have to be a little mature." So he's talking to the kids. You have to be mature. Yeah, he was. He said, "You have to be mature and do the right things. You can't say, well, I'm a kid, I'm too young, I don't have to do the right things." No. Even kids have to do the right things also. They have to be mature. What to speak of adults? But we remain kids our whole life. An 80-year-old kid. Yeah. You'd be surprised how many 80-year-old kids there are. Really. Some people, they never grow up because they don't want to take responsibility. And they don't want to think about what to do with their life. They don't want to think, how am I going to protect myself from Maya? Maya is very strong. You know, strong for kids, strong for adults, strong for men, strong for women. Maya is very strong. And we need protection. We need a lot of protection. Well, what protection are we going to arrange for? The clothes, they are part of the protection. So, it's good if we can wear them whenever possible. And we have to, in a mature way, with intelligence, judge when it's possible. It may be too much to rock up at work like this. A few people may get fired, and I don't want to take that responsibility upon my shoulders. So, that would be bad karma. So, no, everyone has to judge for himself, right? How far to take it. But realize, whatever material things we bring into our life, they have their influence on us. They have their influence. Material association doesn't just come from people, it also comes from things. If you fill your house with mundane things, mundane pictures, if you hang a mundane calendar on the wall, it's preaching to you. It's preaching. You're just a mundane calendar. It's preaching to you some picture of the nice dry Australian outback with a kangaroo, just telling you. This calendar is telling you, you can be happy in Australia. Right? Yes, that's what it's preaching to you all the time. Yes, this is a happy place. This is Australia. No worries, it says on the calendar. Yes. And each time you look at it, it's subtly telling you, yes, you are happy here. Yes, this is it. Sydney Opera House. Oh, yes. We're part of Australia. Dinky Dye, True Blue. Yeah. No worries. Everyone's happy in Australia. Best country in the world. Like that. Right? We're so lucky to be here. We're not lucky to be here. It's just the material world. We've got to get out of here as quick as possible. But where to go? Here in the material world, there's nowhere to go. Therefore, we may as well stay and take shelter of Krishna and the process of devotional service. Then we can go back to Godhead. That's the real place to be. So, the clothes are part of a culture that helps us. And we need that Vaishnav culture. Without it, we won't make it. We won't make it. If we don't accept the Vaishnav culture, will be very difficult to make it. Very difficult. Something to think about. Anyone else? Yes.
That's okay. That's okay. Don't worry. See, we should not think that we are the doer. We are not the one who's going to convince anybody. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, he said, if you think you can make anybody into a devotee, then you are in total illusion. He says, every living being in this material world is a devotee by nature. You cannot make them a devotee. And Krishna can attract them. And our business is to simply give them Krishna. Everyone, we just give them Krishna. And let Krishna convince, let Krishna attract. He can do better than we can. He can do better than we can. So it's not that we have to put on other clothes and then we can convince them better. No. Let's just be like this and convince them by letting Krishna convince them. Simply give Krishna. Because you'll meet that one sincere person. Yes? By being straightforward amongst these many people that are that don't want anything to do with it. You'll find one who's deeply touched, even if he doesn't show it to his friends, but it deeply hits him and it starts to work inside. And he will come. In South Africa, just recently on the way to Australia, I came through South Africa this time from Europe, and I stopped and I stayed one night in the house of a devotee who is like a big leader in the yatra now. And this devotee, he told me that he used to be an evangelic Christian. And, you know, their thing is to give someone one of the brochures, you know. That's their mission in life, right? They got these little brochures, and whenever they give someone a brochure, saved another soul. Yeah. He doesn't like Christians. Bang, bang, bang. Don't shoot. So he said then one day he saw a group of Hare Krishna devotees in a kirtan. So he thought, let me save them. So he went and he had a brochure in his hand and he went up to the devotees and he tried to give him a brochure. But all the devotees were jumping and like anything, and the kirtan was really going. So finally one brahmacharya looked at him and said, oh, you want me to take the brochure? Okay. He took the brochure. Yes, Christian, I saved him. And then he was home, and then he was thinking, they looked really happy, actually. They looked like they really had a good time, and he really had a close-up look. And that thought began to just work in him. It began to work inside. And in due course of time, he just knocked on the door and surrendered. And now he's one of the big leaders in the South African yatra. So, I mean, these people, they look impossible to convince, right? But no, just stand up for the truth, and the truth will act itself. Krishna will attract them. Well, someone first give someone else a chance. Sure. I also have a quote from you. Unfortunately, it's anonymous, but the quote is nice. It says, the religion that marries the spirit of the age will be a widow tomorrow. So that's also interesting. But to show the other side of the coin, because now we also have all kinds of strategic preaching called bridge preaching, where, you know, we do have devotees who dress up like 007 and who are going amongst the people and act as if they're, yoga teachers, you know, yes, hatha yoga, and touch your toes and tip and tip of the nose and all these things, yes, you know. Whereas actually, we couldn't care less about these things. But we go with all this just to attract people, and then we put, and today we're going to chant mantras, and we all say, Om. And then let's try another one. Siram deiram deiram. And then, oh yes, we have, oh yes, there's one nice mantra. Govinda jaya jaya, Gopala jaya jaya. Oh yes, and oh, by the way, did you ever chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra? Oh yes, take that one in also. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Oh, nice. Yes. And in this way, and then cauliflower pakoras with tomato chutney and hot halva with fresh pineapple and like macadamias usually gets them anyhow. So like this, bridge preaching is also being employed, and that is that's all right as long as it's a minority thing. When that becomes the predominant program, then at one point we'll forget who we are, you know. At one point, we really forget who we are, right? When we never, ever wear dhotis anymore, because for preaching, you know, then at one point, we'll need to go to a museum to see what a dhoti was like, you know. Yeah? How was it like? Yeah. Some museum, you know. Original Hare Krishna from... from the early 30 years, you know, you see all these dolls dressed up with tilak and this dhotis, and you're all looking at it like, whoa, you know, look at them, you know. So, bridge preaching, yes, there is some room for bridge preaching, but it goes pretty far. Talking about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he came from tradition, he lived very, very renounced, and then he started to this yukta vairagya of using all the modern things and so on. But a lot of us, we never lived that traditional. We grew up quite modern, and we never really performed all the austerities. We always lived with all the opulence, and then we're coming in spiritual life, and we have all the opulence, and may and. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta built a bridge between tradition and modern times. And then he went over that bridge and started to preach in modern times. We were born on the modern side of the bridge. And maybe sometimes it is good to go back over the bridge for a few days and go to Vrindavan and be very traditional. We wouldn't be the loser. So to keep some tradition in our life, some Vaishnav tradition, some Vaishnav culture, we won't be the loser. The end. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.